scores! Gilmore scores! With 1:03 left!
Off the glass, it left corner to Aguila. Aguila the left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by all Aguila. Rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg.
It is a Tuesday, June 3rd. Let's get this hour of Flames Talk underway. We got a busy hour coming up for you here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan and wherever you get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify, Amazon, and more. Steinberg along with you, and welcome to the Sports Drive brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. The moving sale is on now. Save big on safes, smart locks, keypads, and more. Visit CalgaryLockAndSafe.com. Let's see. We are underway at the NHL Scouting Combine. So Scouting Combine Week is underway. We are just over 3 weeks away from the NHL Draft, and we're less than a month away from free agency. Oh, and we're on the eve of the Stanley Cup Final as well, as the Florida Panthers and some other team will meet for a second consecutive year. It's time to check in with our NHL insider to kick off the hour on this Tuesday. It's time to say hello to Frank Saravalli, and he's brought to you, as always, by South Trail Chrysler, where they always make the buying process simple. Look for the big Canadian flag at 130th Ave, or visit SouthTrailChrysler.com. And Frank joins us now from Daily Faceoff, DailyFaceoff.com, Amazon, and more. Oh, and just happens to join us from that other city. He's in our provincial capital, Edmonton, Alberta, as game one of the Stanley Cup Final is on Wednesday night. Hello, Frank.
How you doing, Pat?
I'm good, man. I'm good. Welcome back to Alberta, and we will get to the Stanley
Cup Final. Your backyard.
Yeah, you're right in my backyard, and I'm happy to have you. Yeah. You didn't pay the toll, but you know what? We'll waive it for this time. Hey, June's underway. We'll get to the Cup Final. We'll get to your list of free agents and a whole lot more here in just a second. But, you know, we know how busy a month June is in the NHL. We know that this is when teams really start to get the rubber on the road for signing potential pending UFAs and, you know, agreeing to terms behind under the table with potential UFAs, so on and so forth. How busy a month are you expecting here from the Calgary Flames?
From the Calgary Flames, I mean, yeah. I'd say probably pretty busy. I think they're going to be exploring a lot of different things. I think they want to try. I think they know that the path to get there isn't necessarily at this point in time abundantly clear, that there's a lot that needs to shake out on this market. And I think their effort, their focus, their aggression, they're all in lockstep and proper order. And at the same time, they want to make sure that they don't do any damage. So what does that mean? That you don't get ahead of your skis and do something that you're going to regret in the long haul. The temptation is always there. It's easy to do. And I think they want to be real careful to make sure that they methodically plot along. And when I say plot, P-L-O-T, not P-L-O-D,
right,
that they put this team in a position to be successful for the long haul.
They have two first-round picks once again at the NHL draft. They'll pick 18th with New Jersey's selection, and then we're hoping 32nd with Florida's selection. What's your read on how willing the Flames would be to maybe move one of those picks if it could help them do exactly what you were just talking about?
I think there's a natural curiosity. I think the best way to think about it or talk about it would be that this draft is really beauties in the eye of the beholder. Definitely some good players. There's probably a handful of impact players. And then once you get past, according to the scouts that I trust, maybe the 12th pick, you might be able to get the same player down in the 40s. Thought process that maybe this is the year where we're going to see more picks moved and you could see high-end picks moved. Like, I think there's a real chance that we see one and or multiple of the top five picks traded. And I think the Flames, you know, a bit further down the draft board are going to be considering a lot of the same thoughts.
What teams would you be highlighting in the top five that might be amenable to moving their pick?
I think Chicago and Utah are probably pretty open to the, I think they've both invested significant resources in the draft in recent years and realize that there's only so much capital that goes around in terms of really being able to wield a draft pick to bring meaningful change to your roster. And I think they're both pretty open-minded organizations about wanting to get better in a relatively short period of time.
Yeah, I'd be really interested to see what it would. We see teams trade out of the top five so seldom, Frank. What would it take for that to happen? Not even related to the Flames, just period.
I think it would take something really meaningful that teams understand the value and the caliber player that you typically get in that position. And they'd say, we'll move it, but you got to make it worth our while.
Yeah. Interesting.
I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that there's others. Like if you said to me, San Jose is going to trade a pick, I wouldn't be shocked.
Okay. Boy. I'll tell you what, Frank, in this market, if the Flames could trade into the top five, it would be like the ending of Return of the Jedi, where they like you'd see partying in the streets. There'd be fireworks going off.
I've never seen Star Wars.
Really?
Never seen a single Star Wars.
You know what?
Does that make me a dork?
No, I think I would be more in the dork category with how many times I've seen some of the different...
All right, let's park the Star Wars thing for a second, though. Help me understand the psyche of the marketplace.
So, and I don't think this is the entire marketplace, but I think that there are some in the market that are very, very adamant that the only way the Flames are going to get to the point they want to get to under Craig Conroy and to ultimately be successful in turning into a cup contender and maybe winning a Stanley Cup is if they can get a franchise player and if they can draft a franchise player. And as we know, the odds of doing that are significantly higher in the top five. And so I think, you know, even the comparisons to the Dallas Stars that continually get made in this market, which I understand because the Stars have done an incredible job of finding high-end players later in the draft. They also had a third overall pick in Miro Heiskanen, and he is one of their foundational pieces. So I think that there is a large group of fans who, you know, even if they are fully on board with what Craig Conroy is doing right now, do believe that for them to ultimately turn into a Stanley Cup contender, that they probably will need that top pick.
Okay, so let's unpack that for a second. Because if a franchise player could be ascertained with a top five pick in this year's draft, don't you think one of those teams, Utah or Chicago or San Jose, would just keep the pick then? Wouldn't the signal to you be if they're trading out, that means that they're not really big believers in it?
Yeah, I think that's very.
Is that
that's
too
very
pessimistic
fair.
Of a view?
No, I think it's a very fair. I think it's a very fair view. I think that on the other side of it, you know, you take a look at the success the Flames just had in their most recent draft, as a lot of people point to the 2024 class and say, geez, the Flames did a really good job of targeting top talent, and that could end up being a really good draft class when it's all said and done. Way too early still, but that was kind of the initial thought coming out of the class of 2024. So maybe the counterpoint to that for some fans would be, hey, this team's done a good job of identifying talent, so maybe they think that somebody in that mix is a higher-end bet than maybe some other teams do.
Yeah, or maybe then if the value chart is changing a little bit this year, maybe it makes sense to package the two first round picks you have and maybe try and move up higher into maybe the top 10 or something.
Yeah.
I'd have to really do the math on what that looks like, but would it be possible to get to 9 again or 8?
I don't know. I mean, depending on what their, you know, what their idea is in terms of what they have as potential assets, if they could, I think there'd be a lot of people happy about it, because I do think in this market there's been some frustration with the fact that, you know, instead of keeping their own pick, they've transferred that to the Montreal Canadiens.
But I guess my thought process, or maybe this is a better, cleaner way to say it, is it's not that simple, and context matters and is important when evaluating the entirety of the class.
Yeah. Very fair. Yep, very fair. Frank Saravalli's with us, joins us Tuesdays as our NHL insider. Hey, what as we move away from the Flames, what's your read on Jonathan Toews here, as he just debuted this week at number 8 on your pending free agent board? Hasn't played since the 22-23 campaign, where he played part of a season. Has been dealing with that chronic immune problem for the last little while, but ready to return to play at the age of 37. What does this look like? How does the Jonathan Toews return to the NHL story play itself out here?
Well, there's a lot of interest, I can tell you that, because teams are looking at this going, if he's truly solved his health issue, which by all accounts has been pretty significant, fascinating alternative medicine healing journey through India. Look back at his last season. Yes, he missed 2 seasons, but look back at the last year that he played. And the thought process is, it's not just his career resume and experience and leadership, 3 Stanley Cups, a Conn Smythe, and a Selkie, that it's also his most recent production. 15 goals and 31 assists, or 31 points in 53 games. And that was while he was ill. That's a 47-point pace over an 82-game season. And so if he's healthy, would you consider that to be 2 years later, sort of the minimum baseline of what you might be able to get from him? If you could take that and do it in a no-risk fashion, meaning relative minimum salary plus significant performance bonus possibilities that wouldn't apply to your cap necessarily next season, if you can add a player with that resume that'll give you 50 points and conscientious play, that's a hugely valuable proposition.
Yeah.
So I think there's no shortage of a half dozen serious contending teams that are very, very interested in Jonathan Toews and his services.
Interesting story to keep an eye on. I'm looking forward to seeing how that plays itself out. And I'm really happy to see Toews ready to return and play again, which is the best part of all of this. Your thoughts on Lane Lambert being the guy Seattle decides to go with as Dan Bylsma's replacement?
Slightly surprised. I think, I don't know that I was necessarily expecting to see Lane Lambert back in the mix from a head coach perspective this quickly. I mean, it's really only 18 months or so removed from his last tenure with the New York Islanders. And it obviously didn't last long. He got a season and a half, and they made their change. And it was his first crack at being an NHL head coach. He had spent a long time on an NHL bench, serving under Barry Trotz, and got a chance to do it himself, and it went sideways and he was out. And then came back and spent last year as an associate coach with the Toronto Maple Leafs. And he does certainly have some presence. He has a lot of interesting qualities and definite experience. But I think when you looked at the list of quality candidates that were out there, either first-time candidates, new blood, or whether it was the next, you know, guy getting another crack at it. Definitely not saying at all that they made a mistake or anything like that. It's just, I don't know that he was necessarily on that many radars heading into this coaching cycle.
Yeah. Well, I was, because it kind of rolls into my next question. Like, I was thinking, geez, Mitch Love, that would be a really good fit. Guy who coached in the area is recognizable in the Pacific Northwest for his time coaching and playing in the Western League. I was like, yeah, Mitch Love might be a really good bet. Instead, they go.
Jay Woodcroft has spent almost the entirety of his.
You still there, Frank?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Sorry, you just cut out a little bit.
I said Jay Woodcroft has spent the entirety of his career in that division.
Yeah, exactly. So it just feels like there is some ready-made ideas there. They go Lambert instead, but that means Mitch Love, and he's been connected to some other spots. Is like the former coach of the Wranglers, is he a guy that maybe ends up landing an NHL head coach job here this summer?
Yeah, I think he's certainly in the mix in Pittsburgh, and I think he's... I'm still wondering if we could see more shakeups here in the coaching landscape. I think there's been lots of rumblings today about the job security of Pete DeBoer. I think the Dallas Stars have been in day-long meetings trying to diagnose what's happened. And with Pittsburgh, Boston, and then now potentially throwing a wrench into things with the Dallas Stars, we'll see what happens here, but I think there's still more to be told.
Yep. I'm curious to see how that all plays itself out. Okay, let's wrap up with what you're doing in Edmonton, because we're on the eve of the Stanley Cup Final. Before we get to the matchup, we found out this week that Alexander Barkov, who will play a key role in this Stanley Cup Final rematch, is the Selke Trophy winner for a second consecutive season. Like, I know what I believe on Alexander Barkov and how high esteem I hold him as a player. Like, Is this a guy that can, like, if he wanted to this summer, could start writing his Hall of Fame induction speech? Are we at that point with Barkov now?
I think so. I mean, especially if they win, two-time Stanley Cup winner, three-time Selke winner, decorated leader and player. He's certainly one of the best players of his generation. He's one of the all-time great detail players. And I think the funny thing is, when you consider, and not to bring up a sour note, but when you consider there's before Matthew Tkachuk arrived, and as they were trying to figure out how to get their hands on someone like Matthew Tkachuk, there was this notion that existed out there that Alexander Barkov didn't have the juice. He didn't have what it took to win. And I think some people mistook his personality, where he's like truly, probably, this sounds funny to say, a sweetheart of a human being. Like, he's just a really nice guy. And I think some people mistook that for lack of grind, compete, interest in digging in. And I think it just goes to show you that all different kinds. It takes all different kinds. It's really difficult to win. And it's not just ever on one person. It's on a whole group of players coming together. And talking about that today at Media Day, where he said, we've got a lot of really interesting personalities. Probably, he said, the more weird you are, the more you fit in, provided that you do our four or five non-negotiable things. And if you do those and everyone does those, then everyone fits in. And I'm not saying at all that he's different, just that it's amazing how narratives and stories change once someone finds their way to the top. Because to think of any idea as Alexander Barkov doesn't have what it takes to win and he's just a nice player and a nice guy, I just don't know that that could be more further from the truth.
Yeah. Okay, so Barkov and the Panthers, defending Stanley Cup champions, the Oilers looking to flip that script in a Stanley Cup rematch. Unlike last year, game one and two played in Edmonton. They had the better record during the regular season, so if there is a game seven, would be at Rogers Place in Edmonton this year. What in your mind is different about this year's Stanley Cup final, and why might the result be different than last year? And at the same time, kind of what leads you to believe the result might be the same? I'm just curious as to how you read this matchup 1 year later.
So you just hit on one of them, the fact that the series starts in Edmonton. And I can't help but think about Connor McDavid in that clip after game two that was featured on the Amazon series, where he said, not bleep, we have to dig in
right
now. And the series, when it went back to Edmonton, down 2-0, it just didn't have the same feel. There was like this disappointment, I think, arriving for a whole contingent of people that felt like, hey, the Stanley Cup drought in Canada has now told another year, that the series was already over and they were dead and buried by then. And having flipped it, starting in Edmonton, knowing what the Oilers learned last year, I will be absolutely floored if they leave Edmonton to head to Florida for game three down 2-0. I think at the very worst, they come out of it with a split. And I think on the ice, the big thing that differentiates the Oilers this year from last year is their ability to withstand and manage the forecheck. They've exited their zone so much more cleanly and efficiently. Jake Walman and John Klingberg have been huge difference makers. They've played every game but one so far without Matthias Ekholm, their number one defenseman. And I think having their best group of defenders since really kind of the glory days of the Oilers in the 80s, that they're better prepared. And you could turn around and say, well, the Panthers are better this year than they were last year, and you might be right. But I just think that as close as it was last year, that Edmonton and their star power has the ability to take this different story.
Enjoy your time. Hey, enjoy the Stanley Cup final. Then you roll right from the Cup final into one of the busiest couple weeks of the year. So
yeah.
Enjoy it. We will. I won't talk to you for a couple of weeks. We'll be back for draft week. We'll hook up with you again then, my friend. But enjoy the Cup final. Hey, and
enjoy yourself and who you got in the final.
Ah, the Flames are picking.
You
30
can't
seconds.
Say it out loud.
No,
I'm going to say Oilers in seven.
You're going to say Oilers in seven?
Mm-hmm.
I'll say Florida in seven.
All right. Well, seventh heaven then. We'll see you there.
Bye, buddy. Be well. Hey.
See you later.
Frank Saravalli from Edmonton and the Stanley Cup final. Frank joins us every Tuesday here on Flames Talk. Flames Talk will take a little bit of a hiatus following Wednesday's show for a couple weeks, but we will be back for draft week at the end of June. And Frank Saravalli joins us every week, brought to you by South Trail Chrysler, where they always make the buying process simple. Look for the big Canadian flag at 130th Ave or visit southtrailchrysler.com.
Flames Talk is on the air and streaming on the Sportsnet mobile app. Sportsnet 960 The Fan, Calgary.
It's Steinberg and Vickers along with you this hour on the program. Aaron Vickers of NHL.com joins in with us. Thanks to Frank Saravalli for joining us to kick off the hour. And now Megan Mickelson joins us to wrap up the hour. The color voice of the Flames joins us once a week here on Flames Talk, even during the off season. And Mick with us now on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Hello, Mick. How are we doing?
Hey, Pat. I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well. As soon as we found out the news on Friday, the first person I thought of was you, the news being a little bit of a coaching shakeup for the Flames as Trent Cull promoted to a full-time assistant on the Flames next year, along with Brad Larsen returning to the team and Dan Lambert and the team going in different directions. And the reason I thought of you was because, well, Mick speaks to a member of the coaching staff every single game day, and I'm like, oh, that'll be a little bit different, a little bit of a different rotation, and yet same group that you've been speaking to. You've spoken to Brad. Obviously, Trent joined the staff in late December this year, but I thought of you immediately. I'm just curious as to kind of what your initial reaction was to the coaching news, and then we can kind of dive in specifically on Trent Cull.
Yeah, I think like my initial thought was just, I guess, how much I enjoyed getting to chat with each and every one of them. You know, seeing Brad step away, obviously, you know, that was tough. And, you know, I remember the last coach's interview that I did with him in Columbus prior to him leaving. And I remember leaving that interview and thinking like, wow, that was some, like, really great insight. Like, you could tell he is so smart. I mean, they're all amazing at what they do, obviously, to be coaches at the NHL level. But, you know, to see Brad have to step away for personal reasons, I mean, you felt for him and for his family. But he was fantastic to deal with. Dan as well, I mean, all season long. You chatted with him a ton also on the post-game show. And he was just, he's just such a nice guy. Yep. And he was a fantastic coach as well, it seemed. And then, I mean, we all know about Trent and his contagious positive energy and just kind of what he brought as well. So, I mean, they're all fabulous and fantastic to chat with and brought some really great insight. So excited to have Brad back. Really sad that Dan won't be with the group anymore. Like I said, just really enjoyed my conversations with him and just what a great guy he seemed to be. But I think, you know, Trent Cull, he's earned this. I think he did a great job in coming up and, you know, what he did with the penalty kill. I mean, you could tell just talking to him, he has a presence about him and an aura with his energy and just what he brings in that sense. So, I mean, you look at the coaching staff that they have now, you know, led by Ryan Huska, you obviously have Brad and the experience that he has, you know, and Trent Cull as well. And, Kale, I mean, he's done a fantastic job also. And so you look at the four of them, plus you throw Jason LaBarbera in as a goaltending coach, and that's like a pretty all-star coaching lineup, if you ask me. So I think the group is in really, really good hands heading into next season. And yeah, sad to see Dan go, but excited for the group and what that staff will bring.
What and you touched on it there, Mick, but what specifically about Trent and the penalty kill did you like so much? Because look, I know that you killed penalties when you were playing, and I know that you asked plenty of questions throughout the year about that as it really improved, and it went from being, you know, one of the worst penalty kills in the first stretch of the season to one of the best penalty kills in the final 48 games or so in the NHL last year. What really stood out to you about what was done there?
Yeah, I feel like the penalty kill was something that Trent and I sort of bonded over just in our conversations. Like you said, I killed a lot of penalties. And so, you know, he was always, you can tell on the plane, and, you know, that coaching staff, they're constantly watching video, breaking things down. But I know just through our conversations, how tirelessly he worked, how much video he watched, and really trying to turn that penalty kill around. And so, you know, the conversations that we had and just how intelligent he is in, I guess, recognizing what was not working and what adjustments they needed to make. And, you know, from our chats and just watching the team and, you know, my knowledge with the penalty kill, they were giving up a lot through the middle and, you know, the seam passes, that those are the high danger passes that are made on the power play when they go right through the seams, when you give up those shots from the inner slot, and they were giving up a lot of those. And so what Trent did was he sort of collapsed the penalty kill in their own zone so that they were playing a lot tighter. And so they weren't giving up as much through the middle and in those high danger areas. And then, I mean, it's one thing to coach it and to recognize what's not working, to make the adjustments from a, you know, a system standpoint, but then to have the players buy in, like, that is massive, to get the guys to really believe in what you're doing, to stick with it even when it's not going well. And there were times when it was not going well. And I really think that, you know, he has a way with getting guys to buy in to what he's trying to get them to do. And he did a great job of that with the group. And so with all of that put together, they were really successful. So, you know, I think it was just his knowledge and being able to recognize what wasn't working and what needed to be fixed. And then, you know, getting the guys to buy in and to execute it. So, you know, I think huge props to him for doing that and being able to turn it around the way that he did. They also made an adjustment on their penalty kill forecheck in the neutral zone as well. You know, they weren't holding the line as well as they wanted to, whether it was the red line or their own blue line, and allowing entries too easily. So, you know, shifting up the forecheck also, and that was something that was done really well as well. So, and the last thing I would say, just adding to that, I could talk about the penalty kill forever, but I won't, because I know some people find it kind of boring, was, you know, the personnel changes that were made, and, you know, recognizing the guys that were, you know, firing on all cylinders and doing really well on the kill, and sort of, you know, letting them have that role and run with it. And one guy was Kevin Rooney, another one, Jonathan Huberdeau. I know he was on the PK earlier on in the season, but was then rewarded with more penalty kill time, you know, kind of as things went on, because he was executing, you know, what was asked of him really well. So I think that it's, you know, it's that as well as, you know, the personnel changes and then rewarding guys with executing. So, you know, a lot of things are changed, a lot of adjustments. I mean, it's tough as a player too, when you have a new coach come in and, you know, it's not just a different voice, but you're being asked to do different things. But I just thought he handled it like absolutely perfectly.
Yeah, and Mick, I'll leave the technical breakdown to you, because you've probably forgotten more about penalty kill structure than I'll ever know. The only thing I'll re-highlight is, it's one thing to identify the issues and make the tactical changes, and you touched on it as well, but getting the buy-in after the fact. And I think Trent has such a magnetic personality. He's such a big, large personality that people gravitate towards him. So when he has an idea, he has a suggestion, or he sees something that he maybe wants to tweak or change, I don't think it takes a lot of buy-in from the players to be convinced that, hey, let's give him a shot, do it his way, see what happens, and go from there, just because he does have that sort of personality or that swagger that people, and I imagine his players, gravitate towards too.
Yeah, he's really just like a fun guy to be around too. Like, he's just, he's one of those people that, you know, I found it's like he never has a bad day. And so when you have someone on your coaching staff that comes to the rink with that attitude every single day, and just positively impacts absolutely everyone around him, like, that is so massive for just, you know, environment on a team, and it makes a big difference. So, I mean, I can't say enough good things about Trent Cole. So glad that he'll be back next season.
We're chatting with Megan Mickelson, the color voice of the Calgary Flames, joins us each week here on Flames Talk. You know, here we are, we're less than a month away from free agency opening up. And to this point, Dan Vladar has not re-signed with the Flames. I think it's at the very least safe to say there's a chance. I don't know what the chance would be or how you would classify the chances, but I think that there is a non-negligible chance that, you know, Dan Vladar might be elsewhere and the Flames might be looking for different options or going about a different plan behind Dustin Wolf next season. So in the event that Dan Vladar and the Flames are unable to agree to something, and maybe he does sign elsewhere and doesn't return to the Flames for next season, we know Dustin Wolf is the guy. We know Devin Cooley is under contract and had a great first half of the season in the American League before things fell off. And the Flames would undoubtedly be signing somebody else as well to compete with Devin for that second spot behind Dustin Wolf. But how comfortable would we be, friends, if it's not Vladar, an established guy, backing up Dustin Wolf next year? What would the comfort level be, you think?
Sorry. I took a deep breath in there. I've had a day. Anyways, I think the first thing that comes to my mind is, like, it's too bad if they can't figure something out with Dan Vladar. Just hearing him talk in, you know, the exit interviews, it seemed like, you know, kind of the vibe he was giving off was that he wanted to come back. But I mean, you can't blame him for looking elsewhere, especially you look at the way that he ended the season and then his performance at Worlds as well. He was absolutely outstanding. But I mean, it's a huge opportunity for Dustin Wolf, and it, you know, I think it puts a little bit more pressure on him as well. I think, you know, the pressure's pretty high for him, especially, you know, given his contract situation. Like, he's going to need to have a really, really strong year if he wants to, you know, go to the bank, so to say. But I think that, you know, it's more pressure on him because, you know, you don't have Dan Vladar, a more established goaltender as of right now anyways, that's there to bail you out if you need it, I guess, you know, and there would be some comfort there for Dustin Wolf in knowing, you know, if Vladar was there, not necessarily that it's a 1A, 1B situation. I think we're all well aware that that's not the case anymore, that, you know, Wolf will start the season as the starter, but just a guy that, you know, if Wolf, you know, struggles in his second full season in the NHL, that, you know, you'd have someone there to kind of to bail you out a little bit. But I do think, like, I would agree with you, Pat, that they'll bring in someone else if Vladar doesn't sign, that will be able to compete with Devin Cooley. But I, you know, I'd also be curious to see how Cooley would show up at camp and the type of performance that he could bring. I know that his play dropped off, and, you know, that was, I believe it was after a concussion.
Yep.
So,
yep.
You know, maybe he just needs the summer to reset and to get himself back up and running again. So I'd be really curious to see how he showed up at camp as well. But I mean, it's so tough to say. It's like trying to predict the future as to, like, I mean, as of right now in this moment, I would say, like, I'm very comfortable with Dustin Wolf being the starter, and just knowing his personality, his level of confidence, how he always seems to rise to the occasion, that he's just going to come back next season and he's going to be even better than he was this past season. That is my feeling right now, but I mean, you never really know. So as long as he has a serviceable backup, then I think, you know, Dustin Wolf will be just fine and the Flames will be fine.
I won't lie, I'd be a little uneasy if it isn't Vladar, just knowing what he was able to give you from the Four Nations break onwards, what we saw at Worlds, as you mentioned, Mick, and the relationship that he and Dustin Wolf seem to have as a tandem, and the chemistry that they have as a tandem. That said, I'm saying that assuming Vladar leaves and not knowing who replaces him, whether it is Cooley or whether it is another veteran backup that can provide things similar to what Dan Vladar did. I just like how that duo meshed, and yes, the season started as sort of a 1A, 1B, or a, you know, a level playing field between the two of them. And obviously Dustin Wolf is going to be the de facto number one going forward as the franchise goaltender for this organization. But there's just something about how those two got along, how those two pulled for each other, the gradual understanding that, yeah, Dustin Wolf, and we heard it from Dan Vladar and Locker Clean. I was like, yeah, I know who the partner is here. And I know his age, I know his resume, and I know that he's the guy. I just find a little bit of comfort in that dynamic of both goaltenders fully buying in and fully understanding of what the team and what the goaltending staff are trying to accomplish with the two goaltenders that they have.
Mm-hmm.
I just, from my perspective, I'd be worried slightly about disrupting that. Now, again, that's not to say that whoever they do bring in, or if it is Cooley that earns the second spot on the roster, I'm not saying that that can't be achieved by a new person, but just knowing the comfort level I have in a Wolf-Vladar tandem, that's what would make me a little bit uneasy about the situation.
Yeah.
Yeah, my only concern is if, you know, Vladar, you look at the way that he ended the season, the way that he played at Worlds, like, does he want more for himself?
Right.
Like, he's not that old. So, you know, if there's any time for him to, you know, explore his options, and I mean, I'm guessing that's why he hasn't signed, because he's, you know, trying to see if there's somewhere else where he'll be given more of an opportunity to play and not to have to sit in the shadows of, I, you know, what he said, like, Dustin Wolf's going to be a legend. He said it himself. So, you know, I just wonder if Vladar wants more for himself. And, you know, if he's not, you know, 100% happy in that role, then I don't think that that's good for the relationship either. So it's going to be really interesting to see how it all shakes out.
For sure. Okay, last one for you, Mick, before we let you go. Do got to get your thoughts on the Stanley Cup Final, which starts on Wednesday in Edmonton. Oilers, Panthers for a second consecutive year. You saw plenty of the Oilers in the regular season and saw a little Oiler action with TNT in the postseason as well. We have a rematch for the first time since the late 2000s, even before the 2010s. We've got a Stanley Cup Final rematch. What's your feel on how this all plays itself out?
Yeah, well, it feels like it's been a month since we've seen a Stanley Cup playoff game. Like, this it's taken forever, it feels like, to get to the finals. But, you know, it's, to me, one of the biggest factors is going to be goaltending. If Stuart Skinner decides to show up and play and to be up to the task, I think he's going to be under an absolute microscope. Then, you know, the Oilers, that, I mean, they're kind of firing on all cylinders right now. It seems like everything is clicking for them, is working for them. So if they continue on that trajectory, and, you know, Connor McDavid says that their best hockey is yet to come. So if that is the case, and I hate to say this, but I think the Florida Panthers should be a little bit worried, mainly in that I don't think Bobrovsky has been at his absolute best. He's been really good, but, you know, I think that, you know, the Oilers, I mean, they're an absolute wagon right now. Yeah. So they're a little bit frightening, but I think, you know, at the end of the day, you never know what can happen in hockey games. You never know who's going to be able to show up and perform under the bright lights and the biggest amount of pressure. So I think either way, we're in for some really good hockey. So I'm pretty jazzed.
Yeah, should be a good series. And, you know, most people are hoping that the Flames end up with the number 32 overall pick from the two-time Stanley Cup champion Florida Panthers.
Yeah.
I think that's what many who are listening right now are hoping for.
Yeah. I'm sure we all are.
And us included. Be well, friend. We will we'll talk to you soon. Have a great rest of your week. Thanks as always, Mick. Great stuff.
All right. Thanks, Pat.
That is Megan Mickelson, the color voice of the Calgary Flames. She joins us once a week here on Flames Talk. She joins us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline, serving the best pizza, pasta, steaks, and ribs for over half a century. Dine in at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast, or call 403-248-3344 for pickup or delivery as we start to wrap things up this hour on the program. Aaron Vickers on Twitter at AA Vickers. Cam Hughes, Shan Virgie, our outstanding producers this hour as well. And this hour has been the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. The moving sale's on now. Save big on safes, smart locks, keypads, and more. Visit CalgaryLockAndSafe.com.